again, and welcome to Foreplay Radio Sex Therapy. I'm your host, certified sex therapist Lori Watson, author of Wanting Sex Again, and blogger at Psychology Today and WebMD. And I have with me Dr. Adam Matthews, my co-host, who's a couples therapist, psychotherapist, and president of NCAMFT. Foreplay is dedicated to helping couples keep it hot. Each episode, we cover an aspect of sex that impacts your sex life and something that you can relate to. So if you find our discussions helpful, please give us a review on iTunes or Stitcher. We would love it if you would tell a friend about us. You can find us also on the web at foreplayrst.com. And if you have a comment or a topic that you'd like us to talk about, we'd love to hear from you. Please send them to us at info@foreplayrst.com. Thanks for listening. Now on to today's topic. Adam, hello.
Hi, Lori. How are you today?
Good.
You feel like talking about sex today?
I do.
Feeling that kind of good?
I do. I feel that kind of good. Yeah.
I feel like you have to feel good to talk about sex. I think that's a minimum requirement.
That's right.
You can't be having a bad day because
can't be sick. Can't be too tired. Gotta feel good.
Good.
I feel like talking about sex.
All right. Well, we're talking about long distance relationships today.
Right.
That's such a difficult subject for so many because long distance relationships can be really stressful, right? I mean, it can induce a lot of pressure on a couple, right?
It can. And I think that in this modern world, more couples are struggling with long distance relationships than maybe before. Although, right, I mean, our parents, World War II, people were, you know, they were gone from their lovers for 2-3 years sometimes and only writing letters, no Skype, no email. Yeah. You know, no texting.
Yeah, and a lot of people just have to have the long distance relationship because of work. We talked about military families.
Yes.
Like most people don't choose this form of relationship. Most of the time, it's forced on them.
Right,
because of circumstances. Right.
Yeah, maybe they're doing graduate school in another town or something. Yeah, and it's rough. It's a hardship.
Yeah. What do you think are the biggest things that detract from the relationship success, the unique stressors that the long distance puts on a couple?
Well, I mean, I think by and large, especially if they're still in a deciding stage, right, a long distance relationship, an engagement before they get married, I mean, there's just not enough time to go through the day and to have conversation about all the little things that you do when you see each other for maybe 3 or 4 hours in the evening.
Yeah. It just reduces your time together, right?
It does.
And time is so vital for relationships to thrive. So figuring out how to get that time in a long distance relationship obviously can be super difficult.
Yeah, I know. Even when my husband used to travel and we had small children, you know, he would call and we would talk, you know, for 20 minutes, you know, before the kids screamed and needed my attention or something. But you just don't have the luxury of saying, this is, you know, all that happened in my day. And then moving from that conversation, kind of the download of the day, into the download of his day and how we're feeling about other things and conversation about, you know, whether it be politics or religion or our kids or, you know, just whatever. I mean, you don't have that luxury to really get to know each other and fill each other in on your world.
Yeah, and especially if you're not already a natural communicator. I mean, putting the phone in and of itself. I mean, I think maybe like FaceTime or Skype can help, and you know, new video technologies help that a little bit. But I, like, for instance, when I go away, I was away this weekend, like talking to my wife on the phone is just doesn't feel natural. And so it takes a lot of effort for me to be able to get that connection, to get that out of, like, this is what's happening, like, this is what's going on.
Right? Yeah. And we know you as a talker on the podcast.
You know me as a talker.
But I'll bet you, I can see how that would still be a different sort of thing.
Yeah. Well, I don't tend to be a phone talker. I want to see you face to face. I want to see, like, so, and my friends tend to know that about me. If we out of sight tends to be out of mind for me, unfortunately. Mm-hmm. And so I don't naturally just pick up the phone and call. So, you know, I do that with my wife. I pick up the phone to call, but it's hard for the conversations to be long, to be meaningful, to be connecting conversations. So I think if that was ever imposed on us, where we would have to be apart for longer than a weekend, you know, or for a year or for six months, like that would be a big challenge for us to be able to overcome that.
Yeah, I talk about something, and I've talked about it before here, but of object constancy, which is, you know, when it's a stage of life for a baby. When the ball goes behind your back, when you're playing ball with a baby, when the ball goes behind your back, babies at earlier ages forget about the ball.
Yeah.
It's out of sight, out of mind. Yeah. They don't see the ball, so they don't reach for it. Later, as the baby grows, the baby's trying to look for the ball that you put behind your back. Mm-hmm. And that's when they've established object constancy. They know the object exists outside of sight.
Right.
But I think that all of us have different levels of what I call relational constancy.
Yeah.
You know, when the person that we love goes away, you know, there's a certain period of time that we remember them, remember their love for us. You know, and when I was a young mother, I mean, that was like 4 days.
Yeah.
You know, my husband would be gone. He was gone regularly for 6 days. And, you know, by day one, I was just like, it was fine. You know, I was a little scattered. Day two, I was a little resentful. Day three, I was a little angry. Day four, he was dead to me. You know, I mean, it was just like.
If 4 days was all it took, huh?
You know, I was just like, I didn't have that ability to retain who we were and who he was to me. I mean, it was really hard on me.
Yeah.
You know, I think that people who probably grow up in more secure families have a longer period of time. But, I mean, a lot of couples are struggling with months at a time.
Yeah. You add on top of that, too, if your love language is quality time.
Oh,
right?
My gosh.
If your love language is quality time and you're in a long-distance relationship, you are probably hurting hard for the feeling loved and feeling cared for.
Absolutely.
And being able to express your love, because what you want is the time together.
I know.
And if your partner is not that way, they're going to feel much more connected much more easily by a phone conversation or something like that. And so that creates some tension there as well, because being able to, or even if your love language is acts of service, right? There's no help. Way to do that. And that makes it really difficult, right? I've had several couples who one of the partners stays at home with the baby and the other travels for work, so they're gone 2 weeks at a time, and they feel really uncared for and unloved simply because and they don't begrudge the job to the person, but they don't feel cared for in part because their partner is not there to help them out with the day-to-day routines of life and with baby care and all that kind of stuff.
Right. I will tell you what I did during those 6 days is I hired help.
Oh, yeah.
Even for 6 days, I mean, maybe that I was a wimp, but I, you know, had three children. And even I had help when I had two children.
Yeah.
You know, just somebody who came in, who helped with meals, who helped pick up the toys, who helped put the kids to bed. I mean, she would stay with me for quite some time during the day to help because we didn't have family nearby. We didn't have any relief. So I highly recommend, don't be a martyr. Don't do it all. Yeah. Please get help, especially if you're an acts of service kind of person.
Or
you
even
need that help.
Even just engaging family support, you know? Like if you don't have family nearby, that's going to be tough.
Or reliable family.
Or friends that are family that can be that support for you and help you out with that kind of stuff. Because otherwise you're winging it solo. And that's why, I mean, we're in relationships for a reason, not just because we don't want to have to wing it solo and be alone. And so that creates some difficulty as well.
Yeah. I have a young woman friend whose husband is going to be deployed in the next couple of weeks. And he's going to be out of the country for 9 months, no visitation.
Oh, my goodness.
I know. 9 months. That is a long time. I mean, they will be able to talk by phone, by Skype, and they'll be able to text probably, except when he goes on a mission. And then he's just out of it completely. And it could be 10 days before she knows if he's dead or alive. I mean, you know, and so it's a problem. I mean, I think one thing could be that couples have an exaggerated sense of the honeymoon when they return, right? Mm. But if you're a person who likes time to connect first, you know, your partner may be thinking, great, we're going to go meet in Hawaii and have all this wild sex. Mm. And, you know, you get there and you're like, I just want to sit and walk on the beach with you. I mean, I just need to catch up. I need to know what it's like to be with you again.
Yeah.
You know, we can have really mixed motives when we get together after a long distance relationship.
You're starting to address the specific issues that long distance creates for our sexual relationship as well.
Yeah.
Right. And one of those is just varying expectations about how wild and crazy the time together is going to be.
Yeah.
Right. Because you do have to have sex when you're together if you're in a long-term
relationship.
Gosh,
I would hope they do.
Because if you don't, like, when is that going to happen? Because obviously, you know, and so that probably is an expectation for both. But if you're not coming in with the same expectations for how often, you know, mm-hmm. all that kind of stuff, then that can get a little tricky.
Yeah,
right?
Or there's a sense of having to get to know each other's bodies all over again, mm-hmm. you know, if it's been a while.
Do you think that creates – there would seem to me to create a lot of really high expectations for the quality of the sex that's going to be in their time together, especially if they don't have a lot of it. If they just have a weekend or they have 1 week together, like the expectations and the pressure could be really high going in, don't you think?
I think so. I mean, right? They're going to think about having sex every night or a few times. And maybe on a normal weekend, you have sex once or twice. But, you know, on a honeymoon weekend after a long separation, it could be, well, you know, my expectation is we're going to have sex morning, noon, and night, right? Because we got to squeeze in all the sex.
We got to get it all in that short period of time.
And it really does hyper-focus on the physical relationship in a way that it might not be sustainable. I mean, you might not have that weekend be as great a sex as you want because, you know, your partner may not feel that. You know, what if you come together and you got a cold or you're, you know, the flu or...
Or it's just been hard to maintain your emotional intimacy when you've been apart.
Right.
Which would seem to me to be critical because otherwise you're having to build that as well as the physical all in the short time that you've had together.
Yeah, I think it's a fantasy of, okay, we're going to live apart and then we're going to have hot sex all the time.
Mm.
It's a fantasy. And some people do it. And I think especially unmarried couples who do that, who maybe they're going to different colleges, right? And the time that they spend together is just filled with sex and dating and lovely time. And then they go away. And one of the things I think about and I'd like to talk about with you is how attachment, how distancers and pursuers play into that.
Yeah.
And how it creates a false sense of what sex is going to be like when they're actually together.
Hmm.
So maybe we can talk about that after the break.
Let's talk about that after the break and some tips for managing that long distance relationship as well.
Okay, great. Foreplay Radio Sex Therapy with Lori Watson and Dr. Adam Matthews. Right back.
Wanting sex again. How to rediscover desire and heal a sexless marriage by certified sex therapist Lori Watson.
Each chapter is designed to fix one of the problems that cause low libido from early marriage through the childbearing years, even all the way through menopause. I've also had men read it and tell me that for them, it was the most hopeful thing they read about resolving sexual problems.
Look for Wanting Sex Again on Amazon.com. You can also talk to Lori Watson for therapy in person or via Skype.
I offer couples counseling and sex therapy, and I think about both aspects of the relationship, emotional intimacy and sexual technique, and that combination together helps marriages be happy.
Weekend couples intensives are also offered. Improve your sex and improve your relationship with Awakening Center for Couples and Intimacy. Find out more at awakenloveandsex.com. Awaken what's possible.
It is one of my great joys in life to be able to really help individuals and couples find strength in their relationships and really find hope again.
Licensed marriage and family therapist, Dr. Adam Matthews from Matthews Counseling.
I work with a wide variety of issues, including depression and anxiety, marital issues, issues with adolescence. I believe that therapy should be designed around you, that it should be personalized to who you are and to your unique situation.
Therapy is available in office, online, and by phone.
I want therapy to be comfortable for everyone. At our office, you'll find that we sit around a fireplace in deep, comfortable chairs, look at the problem differently, and offer practical solutions for you to take home and utilize outside of the therapy room.
Schedule today and rediscover hope.
You can find me on the web at matthewscounseling.net, Matthews with one T. You can contact us through email or phone and find a lot of resources on our website, matthewscounseling.net.
We'll be right back.
Hey, we're back with 4Play Radio Sex Therapy and sex therapist Lori Watson and couples therapist Dr. Adam Matthews. We're talking about long-distance relationships, how to survive that, how to survive it sexually and emotionally in a committed relationship.
And you were talking about at the end there about some attachment theory and how that plays into it, right?
Yeah.
Okay. Distancers.
Yeah. So we need a sense of separateness, right? We all need autonomy. We need time to do our own thing. And then we need closeness and connection. And in some ways, this is a structural way that couples handle it. Sometimes I think that unconsciously they choose a partner who's long distance because they don't handle autonomy very well when they're together. So, for instance, we need our time away. And if that's when we're living away and then we come together, we can have this really intense togetherness experience, potentially intensely sexual, intensely emotional, and then we go our separate ways. And that's all structured. But when we actually live together, now we have to manage that on an emotional basis. How do we get our autonomy? What does our partner feel when we say, oh, by the way, you know, this Saturday I want to go out with my girlfriends? It's like, wait. Weekends are, you know, time that we spend together. That's what we've always done. Or the partner who says, yeah, I know that when we were together, we had sex three times a day, but now we're living together, you know, month in and month out. And no, I don't actually want to have sex three times a day. I did then because it was a balance. I wasn't seeing you every day. I only had you for the weekend. So yeah, I wanted to have sex all the time, but now we can have sex anytime. And so, you know, like the spatial distances change.
Yeah. And you're talking about really there people that start out in a long distance relationship and then move to a more committed relationship where they're together in the same space. What about, how do you see that playing out for couples that may start off in a relationship where they're together in the same space,
but then
living
they have
together,
to
married,
be.
But then they have to be apart for a time, like the couple you were talking about in the first half where he's going to be gone for 9 months.
Yeah, I think that it's part of it is the same problem, right? Mm-hmm. Is that now we have a structural distance and maybe I want more connection and I'm frustrated because this distance is separating us.
Yeah.
So we really have to come up with conscientious techniques to get enough togetherness sexually and emotionally when we're apart from each other.
Yeah, it would seem to me then what you're saying is that we have to acknowledge, one, are we the distancer or are we the pursuer in the relationship? And what how does that play out and how does that affect me in our varying proximity to each other? When we're apart, what does that mean for me? Does that mean that I recognize that if I'm the pursuer, that my partner isn't going to be able to respond to me in the same way, and that maybe if I'm the withdrawer that or distancer, that I've got to be more intentional in pursuit, right?
Yes. Because I think distancers can tend to, especially if it's the distancer who goes away from home, you know, their life is filled potentially with their mission or their work or
they're going to be much more satisfied
their studies.
In a long
they
distance
are.
Relationship,
aren't they? Absolutely. Absolutely. But the pursuer who's left behind is going to be more frustrated, like, you've gone away from me.
Yeah.
Yeah. So I think that absolutely figuring out which side you're on and what your challenge is.
Yeah, because then when they're back together, the distancer may be overwhelmed, may feel really overwhelmed by
crowded.
The pursuer and crowded, right? Mm-hmm. And so they've got to kind of recognize how to, and the pursuer may feel like it, like you said, when they go away, they may feel that as rejection as opposed to seeing it for what it is.
And when their partner finally gets within proximity, they may want to drown them, right?
Mm.
Like, I have all these needs that I've built up, that I've waited for, my sexual needs, my emotional needs. I want you to meet all of them. And the person's like, you know, I've been gone. I've been working. I need a nap.
Yeah.
I need a break.
Yeah.
You know, I need to go see my friends. I need to go have a little autonomy. I've been working my... you know, self to death out there. Now I need some time. You know, it's a difficult thing. I mean, first of all, it's also predictable. And anything predictable is solvable.
Yeah.
So if you've had a conflict about this, even one time, see if there's a way to structure the reunion and structure the expectations.
Yeah, that's really our first tip, right? Is to give it some structure so that you know what to expect and know how to solve the problems if it comes up, right?
Exactly.
Yeah.
So, I mean, also, I think in that structure, you know, talk about what you need. I mean, I think if my partner were gone on a monthly basis, I would absolutely need to talk to them every day. You know, I like talking to my friends, frankly, every day. I mean, certain friends I like to talk to every day. I mean, that's why I like walking with my neighborhood girlfriends. You know, we just kind of keep current, and that's cozy. Yeah. It's not necessarily deep, but it's kind of cozy, and I like that.
Yeah. Yeah, I mean, and then again, when you figure out, am I the pursuer, am I the distancer, your needs become a little more clear, especially in a long-distance relationship.
Yes.
Right? And being able to say, I need space, a little bit of space when we come back together, or saying that I have all these unmet needs and I have to find time to have them filled, or when we're apart, I need you to reach out to me more than you're doing. You know, those type of questions and talking about them directly can solve a lot of these problems really quickly, right?
Right. So if you are a distancer and you don't naturally think about contacting your partner, I would encourage you to set a couple alarms on your phone every day.
Absolutely.
You know, set the alarm, and it's just like maybe set three of them, and on two of them, text your partner. Mm. You know, just find a way to structurally remember, I need to contact my partner. Yeah. And then I would say set a time at night that you talk together.
Yeah.
Which is harder. Gosh, there is so many difficulties you're facing if this is you. Yeah. Harder on different time zones.
Yeah.
You know, it's like
time zones can be a killer.
Time zones are a killer.
Yeah, and you have to have that regularly scheduled time whenever it is to be able to do that. And it's got to be distraction-free. Right?
You can't
have kids running around. You can't have the TV on in the background. You can't be checking email while you do this. I mean, it does need to have some really specificity to it where you're focused on what your partner is saying so that you can really respond well. I think the other thing when you're talking about in that, the structure that you're mentioning that's important is that they have regularly scheduled time together that is valued and is placed on your priority, right? If it's if you're only seeing each other every other weekend, like, you can't miss those weekends. Those weekends have to be priority. Your time together is already so limited that when you cancel because of work, or you cancel because you have another event, like when you miss that time and then you go even longer without seeing each other, like, that can be really damaging to your relationship. And so
people let things crowd in on that time,
absolutely.
Right? Well, you're home and your family wants to see you, but I haven't seen you in, you know, 3 weeks, and, you know, your parents want to come over for a barbecue because they've missed you too. It is an enormous difficulty.
Yeah. That's already, when couples are together, that's
already a difficulty. Or the kids want to see you.
Absolutely.
My God, the kids want to see you, right?
That's just a whole other element that we haven't even mentioned of adding that in becomes super difficult. But yeah, I mean, couples that live together and, you know, and see each other every day have a difficult thing with this. And so getting time together. And so it becomes even more of a priority when you have a long distance relationship.
Yeah.
But what about Lori, how do they maintain their sexual relationship when they're that far apart? I mean, what are some things that they can do when they're apart that doesn't just, when they come back together, they don't just arrive cold? You know what I mean? Like, how do they maintain some heat in their relationship when they're apart like that?
I mean, I think they've got to take advantage of technology, right?
Yeah.
Of Skype sex and phone sex. And I mean, and for some people, that is a huge stretch of vulnerability and courage to start to do these things. You know, they may be the type that it's like, no, I like a sensual warm-up. I like my partner to come up and put their arms around me. That's how I like to start sex. And it's like the idea of having a sexually explicit relationship from afar with technology just scares them to death. But I mean, really, you've got to acknowledge yourselves as sexual creatures, even when you're apart, and start to share things mentally. I mean, it could be a way to build up, you know, really great sex talk.
Yeah.
If you'll allow that.
Yeah. And that does really, it may stretch some people, but it becomes extraordinarily vital, right?
It does.
And then I think the other tip that we have really is about the time apart has to have an end in sight, right? Like, it has to be a time, especially if you're in a dating relationship or a engaged relationship and you're moving towards something that's more committed, a marriage relationship. Like, you have to have some kind of end in sight so that the relationship can begin to thrive and you can know what it's like to be together.
Yeah.
Because that can throw all kinds of kinks in the relationship, right?
Yeah. And I would say at least a year together in the same city before you decide to marry. And that should not be the year you're planning the wedding. I mean, it should be, you know, we need to live together or live in the same city together for some period of time before we absolutely pull the trigger. Because I think that especially dating, long-distance relationships can be glamorized and romanticized in ways that, you know, who the person is doesn't really come fully to the surface until you're living in the same place and seeing each other regularly.
Absolutely.
Yeah. So,
absolutely.
I mean, definitely wait on that engagement if it's a long-distance relationship. And if it's a marriage already, I think, you know, thinking about doing something for 5 years is pretty tough.
Yeah. You know? So let's just kind of review our tips real okay. quick, Lori, and give kind of just a one-sentence summary. First one was about structure. Summarize that for us. What when we say the relationship needs some structure.
Okay. So you want to structure time to talk and to connect. You know, yeah. every night. I mean, to me, I would have to connect every night. And maybe during the day with something cute as well.
Yeah. And that keeps the emotional relationship alive.
And right? warm.
Yeah, absolutely. Another tip was about talking about your needs, right? I'm knowing whether you're the distancer and pursuer in the relationship.
Yeah, you have really to kind of analyze your relationship and your challenge if you're on one side or the other. And again, go to my website, awakenloveandsex.com. Take the Love and Sex quiz, and that gives you – it's a free quiz that tells you which side you're on, both sexually and emotionally, if you're a pursuer or a distancer, and it will help direct you to the challenges.
Right. And tip number three is just be consistent in maintaining the time that you do have together, right?
Right, exactly. And making it – some of it sexual.
Yeah, absolutely.
Making some of that time that you have on phone sexual, whether you're talking yeah. about sex or having Skype sex. I know that sounds crazy to some of you, and some of you are like, oh, yeah, that doesn't sound crazy. That sounds great, which is good.
But that keeps the heat in the relationship,
keeps
right?
the heat going.
And keeps it hot. And then last tip, have an end in sight. You have to have a time where the time apart is going to end, and if you don't know when that is, that makes it much more hard to bear and hard to maintain.
Right.
The relationship.
We can kind of endure anything if we know there's an end in sight. So you're listening to 4Play Radio Sex Therapy with sex therapist Lori Watson and couples therapist Dr. Adam Matthews. Thanks for listening. Hey, help us stay on top here at 4Play. We'd love it if you would subscribe and share it with your friends. And please take 1 sec and rate and review us. Thanks so much.